Okay. Good morning. Thank you. Okay, today's daf is daf Samach Beis, and we're going to pick up at the very bottom of daf Samach Aleph Amud Beis, the last line. And if you recall, what we were dealing with here was a machlokus between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yochanan about whether you, in other words, if someone is over on the Isser of taking ribbis, they take interest, do they have to return it? So Rabbi Elazar's opinion was that for a ribbis that's deoraisa, that's minatora, what we call ribbis kitsutza, which is basically the kind of ribbis where you set up, I'm going to give you $100, you're going to give me back $105, so you make an arrangement in advance to pay back more. That is ribbis deoraisa, but Rabbi Elazar says ribbis drabanan, which encapsulates many things, some of which we've encountered, that you would not be able to enforce in court. A difference in the Rishonim as to whether you have whether it's something that you should do on your own, Latzeis Yidei Shemayim, to return it. But that's the opinion of Rabbi Elazar, only Ribbis Doraisa. Rabbi Yochanan's opinion was, even Ribbis Doraisa, even Ribbis Katsutza, you do not collect in court, and the court would not enforce the return of that money. Okay, bottom line. Amar Reb Nachman bar Yitzchak, my time the Rebbe Elazar. What's the reason of Rebbe Elazar that he says that we enforce Ribbis Ketzutza and not Ribbis Drabanan? He says, the Amar Kra, the Pasuk says, V'chai Achicha Imach, and your brother should live with you. And this Pasuk is written by Ribbis. It says, Atikach Me'ito Neshech V'Sarbis, that you should not take from him Neshech or Sarbis, which are different forms of interest. The pasuk says you should fear your God, and it finishes the pasuk, "V'chai achicha imach," and your brother should live with you. So the way Rabbi Elazar's understanding this pasuk is to say, "Ahadur le," you should return the interest to him, "Kihechi deniche," so that he should, "Kihechi deniche," so that he should, "Kihechi deniche bahadach," the Bach corrects, that so that he should live with you. And ours by, and so basically, this is a chiyav min haTorah to return interest that you take, so that your brother will have money, will have resources. Okay, so that's Rabbi Elazar's source. So Rabbi Yochanan, hai v'chai achicha imach my avid lei. So okay, so Rabbi Yochanan, who says that even in the case of ribbis ketzutza and ribbis doraisa, we do not enforce in court the return of that money. What does he do with this pasuk that says v'chai achicha imach? So he says, he needs it for something very interesting, like we learned in the Braisa. There were two people walking on the way, I guess in a desert. And one of them has a flask or some pitcher or something of water. And the deal is as follows. If they're going to share this water and they're both going to drink from it, they're both going to die because there's not enough water for either of them to reach the next town. Yimshosa echad mehen, but if one of them is going to drink it, magia liyishuv, that he'll reach settlement and he'll survive. But unfortunately, his friend is going to die in the process. Darish ben Petura. Ben Petura said as follows, mutav sheyishtu shnehem v'yamusu v'yayira echad mehen b'misasa shel chavero. It's better that they should both drink, and they should both die, and that one shouldn't see the misa of his friend. And the way that the Mefarshim explained this is the idea that at some point he's going to drink. For that moment, he's okay. At that point, his friend is dying, and he needs to give him the drink. And essentially, they're going to end up sharing it. So that is how Ben Petura understood the halacha, that you needed to share it, and they should both die. Rabbi Akiva Acheba. Achabar Rabbi Akiva, until Rabbi Akiva came a limit, and he learned as follows from the pasuk that we just quoted, V'chai achicha imach. The pasuk says your brother should live with you, and this leads to the very famous principle that we're familiar with, Chayecha kodmin l'chaye chavercha, that your life comes in front of your friend's life, and although it is very unfortunate that the friend will die in the process, he has a right to drink the water. As you can imagine, this has many very interesting halachic aspects, and there's interesting discussions about, you know, very contemporary discussions, like if you have a doctor and the doctor has one dose of medicine, how you choose. They want to know, can you give it to the person who pays you more? There's questions about whether it's halachically acceptable for the parties to have a lottery. Maybe they decide that we're going to pick lots and we'll see who wins. And so a lot of very interesting things. If we want, we could discuss it afterwards. Another interesting aspect, the Shaar Tshuva and Or Chaim discusses that this same concept applies in areas of spirituality, in areas of Ruchnius as well. And therefore, if you're coming up to Pesach and you find a Kezayis Matzah, and you're with your friend, you should eat the matzah and get the mitzvah. And they use this to explain various things. You see, like by Boaz, that in some fashion, Boaz saw that Rus was going to have, the lineage of David HaMelech, and therefore he made an effort to. They said that he referred to Rus as a Moabia, as a Moabite, to the person who was ahead of him to do the gula. Why? Because this way, by referring to her as coming from Moab, chances are he would not marry her, and then he would have that opportunity. So you see that he did something so that he could get the mitzvah and not someone else. They talk about this as an explanation also about how Yaakov Avinu took the brachos from Esav, is because he was looking out for his own spiritual well-being before the well-being of someone else. But the poskim also seem to say that this does not per se preclude someone from giving someone else a schus. So, like, for example, if someone's a moel and they ask him to do the bris, he could defer and let someone else do it, and he doesn't have to take the mitzvah. But based on a Gemara in Yuma, which talks about the as a mashal, says that if you go to measure the orchard, you'll both come out smelling well. So the idea is that if you give someone a mitzvah, that you're both, you get schar for giving him the mitzvah, he gets schar for doing the mitzvah. But there's definitely precedent through this Gemara at going ahead and looking out for your own spiritual health before you can care for the spiritual health of your friend. In any event, that's what Rabbi Akiva's limud is. And so Rabbi Yochanan, who says that he uses v'chayachicha imach for that, he does not therefore have a limud to say that you need to return interest, even if it's ribbis ketsutza, even if it's the oraisa ribbis. And therefore, Rabbi Yochanan is of the opinion that the court will never enforce the return of the money min adin. Okay. So now we're going to deal a little. So now we know the source for Rabbi Elazar's halacha. We're going to deal with some questions on Rabbi Yochanan's opinion that you do not have to, the court, you don't have to return it midoraisa, and the court therefore will not enforce it. Meisvei, I'll ask you a question. It says as follows: Hiniach lahem avihem ma'o shel ribis, that their father left for them, for the yarshim, for the inheritors, left money of ribis. Af al pi sheyodin shehin shel ribis, even though the sons, when they inherit the estate of their father, know very well that they're inheriting ribis, einan chayav lahachziron, that they're not chayav to return it. So what's the implication of that? The implication of that is inu hu de ein chayav lahachzir. This is the way the Bach reads it, that they, the sons, are the ones who don't have to return it. Ha avian, the implication would be that their father chayav lahachzir, that their father would have to return it. So in other words, it's saying that children who inherit it don't have to give it back, even though their father would have had to give it back. So what do you see? You see that the father, if the father had to give it back, it means that there's a chiyuv to give back ribis. So the Gemara says, no, that's not a raya. That implication is not correct. Bidinhu, the halacha is davu anami la mechayv lahachzer, that even the father doesn't need a return. So if so, then what's the chiddush that the children don't need to return it? The idi de kabay lemisnei seifa, because we wanted to learn the seifa, which does deal with a case where the children need to return it. So therefore, we set up the ratio as a case where the children do not need to return it, but even the father would not need to return it. So don't make that implication. What is the seifa? The seifa says, "Hiniach lehem aviam para vitalis v'chol davar mesuim." If their father left, or he bequeathed to them a cow or a talis or anything else that it's very clear, meaning it's a unique thing, something that people know what it is. Chayav and lahachzer, that the children need to return. Why? Mipnei kvod aviam, because of the honor of their father. So if their father took something beribis, in other words, he gave him something worth $100, and he gave him back a talis worth $110, so he took ribis, and everyone's going to see the talis. Every time they're going to see the talis, they're going to say, oh, that's the talis your father took for ribis. So it's not befitting for the father. And therefore, the children should return it to protect their father's dignity. And in that case, the children need to return it. So therefore, Tani Nami Resha Bididhu, that because it wanted to teach the seifa of a case where the children need to return something, so it phrased the Resha, the case where the children don't need to return it. But just because the children don't need to return it, don't read into that, their father does need to return it. He's saying, no, neither the father nor the children need to return it in a regular case of ribbis. In a case of ribbis where the father stands to be embarrassed, even though he's dead, but in other words, where his name stands to be embarrassed that he took ribbis, in that case, the children need to return it. So now the Gemara, once we're on this, is going to analyze this a little bit. It says, V'hani mipnei kvod aviyem mi mechayvi, that he says, are children in fact required to return something for the honor of their father? Kri kan, you should read here, V'nasi ba'amcha lo sar. The Pasuk says that, the Pasuk in Shmos says that, that you should not curse, a nasi, a leader in the community. And we say, why does it need to say ba'amcha? Why doesn't it just say v'nasi lo sar? You shouldn't curse a prince. He say, ba'ose ma'ase amcha. That when should you not curse him? You should not curse him when he is doing the ma'ase amcha. So we've encountered this concept before, is that if he's with Klal Yisrael, meaning he's doing the right things and he's a good nasi, so then you shouldn't curse him. That's why it says nasi ba'amcha, if he's with the people. But if he's not with the people, meaning he's doing bad things, then in that case, you would not need to refrain from cursing him. So therefore, here also, where there is an isser that a person cannot curse his father, but in other words, we're gonna learn, and the Gemara, I believe in Sanhedrin, learns this, that's assuming the father is doing good activities, he's behaving properly. So therefore, why do we believe that the children need to return the ribbis, the item that is clearly identifiable? Why do they need to return it? At the end of the day, their father did bad stuff because he took ribbis, and therefore they should not have to protect his dignity. So the Gemara says, "Kedam Rapinchas Mishrei Derava Bishasa Tshuva." That the Gemara Rashi says, the Gemara in Chagiga, that we're talking about, Rapinchas says in the name of Rava that over there is talking about a case where he did tshuva. Hachinami Bishasa Tshuva. So here also, why do the children need to protect the dignity of their father? Is because they did tshuva for having taken ribbis. Therefore, he's back in the category of ba'amcha. He's with the people. And once he's with the people, you have a chiyuv to honor him. And therefore, the children should return the item so that their father is not embarrassed, or his father's name is not sullied by them seeing and constantly being reminded that he took ribbis.
Tshuva wouldn't require him to return the item.
Next question, the Gemara. The Gemara says, "I asa tshuva, my boy gabe." So if he did tshuva, what's it doing by him? So now you have to understand this a little bit. I said before that there's, according to the opinions that say that mina that latzis yidei shemayim he should return it, it's fine. So then you say if he did tshuva, then latzis yidei shemayim he should have returned it. Alternatively, the way that you can understand the question is saying that I don't get it. Fine, let's say he did tshuva, and he didn't have to return the item. If he didn't care to return the item, he walked around with that talus when he was alive, so then why do you have to return it to protect his honor? He didn't care about his own honor. So the Gemara says, Shelo hispik lahachzer ad shemes. We're talking about a case where the father died before he had a chance to return it. He did tshuva. He would have returned it, either to save himself embarrassment or latzei yidei shemayim to return ribbis. And then he died. He didn't have enough time. In that case, the children would need to return it. But otherwise, they would not need to. Either because he didn't do tshuva, in which case they don't owe him that kavod, or because he himself didn't feel need to return it, so neither do they. Okay, so now a meisve, another question on Rabbi Yochanan, who says that we are not chayiv min haTorah to return ribbis. It says as follows: Hagazlanin, thieves, umalve ribbis, those who lend with ribbis, afal pisha gavu, even though they've collected, machzirin, that you return it. So let's just understand what this is talking about. So as relates to Malve Ribbis, it's very easy to understand. It's saying, Malve Ribbis means I make up with you that I'm going to lend you a dollar. You're going to give me back $1.05, but I didn't collect $1.05 yet, right? So it's saying, don't do that. And if you went ahead and collected, then you should give it back, right? So that's how you would understand the Ribbis. It makes perfect sense. But the Gemara struggles with understanding, what does it mean, Gazlanim, that even though they collected, they should return it? Gazlanin, my afal pisha gavu ikka. What's the case? In other words, The implication is as follows. That says that if you've already collected, you should return it. The implication being, if you didn't already collect it, you shouldn't return it. You should never take it, right? Or you shouldn't enter into it. He says, how do you have of if they didn't? E-guzzle, if they already stole it, guzzle, then it's stolen. So we're not relevant to the question if you didn't. They already did. E-lo-guzzle, if they didn't, if we're saying that they did not, or in a case where it's saying that if they didn't do it, then they shouldn't do it. If they didn't steal it already, then they shouldn't steal it. What does that mean? It says if they didn't steal it, gazlanim karis lahu. Are we going to call them gazlanim? In other words, what makes them gazlanim? In other words, so we're dealing with the implication here. The implication here is even though they collected, you should give it back, which implies you should not in the first instance. So they're saying if he did it already, it's too late. So there's no first instance. And if he didn't do it, why are you calling him a gazlan? So the Gemara says, now none of this is really relevant to our question. It's just clarifying what it is. We'll see our question in a minute. So we say, Ela Ema Gazlanin, that when it says Gazlanim, Umay Nihu, what is a case of thieves? Malve Ribbis, people who lend with Ribbis. So it's saying, thieves, who are people who lend with Ribbis, because people who lend with Ribbis are thieves, Afal Pishagavu Machzirin, even though they've already collected the interest, so it's only talking about a case of interest, it's just calling them thieves, in that case, Machzirin, you should return it. So now that we've explained what the Brisa means, this is now a question on Rabbi Yochanan, because what's it saying? It's saying, even if you've collected Ribbis, you should return the Ribbis. So that's Rabbi Yochanan's opinion, and so the question, that's Rabbi Elazar's opinion, so it's a question on Rabbi Yochanan. So the Gemara says, well, you're right. That Brisa is a problem for Rabbi Yochanan, but it's not a big deal because Tanoihi, because there's a Machlokas Tanoim, and we're going to show you Machlokas Tanoim, and therefore, this Brisa goes like Rabbi Elazar, but Rabbi Yochanan holds like a different Tana. Where do we see that? The Sanya, because we learned in a Brisa. Rabbi Nechemya, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, Potren es ha-malvov es ha-arev, that Rabbi Nechemya, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, Pater, they permit they release the malva and the malva is the lender, va'arev the guarantor, mipnei sheyesh ben kumase, because they have a positive commandment. So what is this talking about? So first of all, the Brisa doesn't say the beginning of the Brisa. Mufarshim say because they didn't have the language, but clearly there was a Tanakama who was saying that various people are chayev for ribbis, one of whom is the malva, the lender, and one of whom is a guarantor, right? So, and then Rabbi Nechemi and Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov are coming and saying, no, the malva and the arev are not chayev, according to them, mipnei sheyesh ben kumase, because they have a kumase. So what is a kumase? Rashi says, we're talking about a lav hanitik liase, right? And this is all talking about malchus. So it's as follows. So it's saying, we know that a lav hanitik liase, the classic case of a lava nitik lase is you're not allowed to steal something. But it says, v'heshev es agzela, if you stole it, you should return it. So when you have a lava nitik lase, a lav, a negative commandment that's attached to a positive commandment, then there is no malchus. Because the punishment is not malchus. What should happen is you should give it back. So they're saying, in this case, the malva and the arev, the lender and the guarantor, do not get malchus because there's a kumvase. So now we're going to try and figure out my kum asay. What's the kum asay? Lav mishum damrinin lahu kuma haduri. Is it not because we're saying to them you should go return it, right? So therefore, when Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov and Rabbi Nechemya say that the malva, the lender, and the guarantor are pater because there's a kum asay, what's the kum asay? The kum asay is that you should return it. So far that's like who? That's like Rabbi Elazar. But mechlal the Tanakama savar. So the Tanakama, who Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov and Rabbi Nechemya were coming to respond to, lav b'nei aduri ninu. He says, is it not because they hold that they're not chayav to return it? And so therefore, what do you have? You have a machlokas between the Tanakama on the one hand, and Rabbi Nechemya and Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov on the other hand. Rabbi Nechemya and Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov say, it's a lav anitik lase, because there's a positive commandment to return ribbis. And the Tanakama says, no, they are chayv and malchus because it's not a lava nitik lase. Why? Because there is no commandment to return ribbis. So now you see that there's a machlokas tanayim about whether or not you have to return ribbis. So therefore, the Tanakama would be like Rabbi Yochanan, and Reb Nechemya and Rabbi Lazar ben Yaakov would be like the Rabbi Lazar. So the Gemara says no, that's not the case. Why? We're not talking at all when we're talking about this malchus. We're not talking at all about this question of whether you need to return ribbis. My kuma say, what is the positive thing that they should do to avoid an isser? Likraya shtara, to rip up the shtar. So basically what we're going to say here is as follows. That separate from the things we've been talking about in various forms of ribbis, one of the psukim, which we've not, I don't think, encountered so far in this parak, but there's a pasuk in there's a pasuk in Shemot says in Kesef Talves Ami, then if you'll lend money into my nation, which says you should lend im haani imcha es haani imcha the ani that's with you lo siya lo kenosha, you shouldn't be like, you know, pressing on him lo sisimun alav neshach, you should not place on him neshach. So what we're now understanding is the following. It's not talking about the general category that you should not pay or collect interest, in which case, what would be the assay that's connected to that is that you should return the money. He's saying, no, that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about the lav that says, lo sosimun olav neshech, you shouldn't place neshech on him, which we understand to mean an iser that comes about well before anyone pays any interest. It's saying you should not even set up a structure of interest. Lo sesimun alav neshach, you should not place on him interest. And so therefore, so they're saying that's the law they're talking about. The Tanakhama says they're chayev. And Rebbe Nechemya and Rebbe Lazar ben Yaakov come and say, no, they're not chayev malchus because there's a kumvasei. There's a way to remedy that. What's the way to remedy it? Rip up the shtar. Right? So we're going to say that we're going to rip up the shtar, and by ripping up the shtar is the assay you're doing. But it's not a question of returning interest. Now, how do we know that that's the case? So we're going to learn as follows. My kasavar. So what does he hold? I kasavar shtar ha'omed ligvos kegavoy dami. So if you're going to say that a shtar that stands to be collected, meaning it's fully effective, that's as if it's collected already. Why? Because Rashi says it puts a shibud, it puts a lien on his assets, and therefore, once there's a lien on the assets, it's as if it's collected. That's one opinion. This is a general argument. We've encountered it before. That is a shtar that's ready for collection. Is it considered as if it's already collected? So if it's considered as if it's already collected, ha'avdu isurayu. They already did the isser. They already did ribbis. And we just, and what we're trying to say is that no one holds everyone would hold that you need to return the ribbis, because we're trying to say that that's not the machlokas over there. So you say, so they did the isser already. V'ilav kigavoy dami, if you say that a shtar omid ligbos is not as if it's collected, halo avid velo klum, then he didn't do anything at all. Nor is that if entering into a shtar is meaningless, and all they did is enter into a shtar, then no one would say that they're chayav malkos. So we say, la'olam kasavar shtar ha'omed ligbos lav kigavoy dami. He says, really, we hold that a shtar that stands to be collected is not as if it's collected. V'hakamashmalan d'shuma milsahi. That, what is this telling us? This is telling us that the imposition of interest, losasimun alav neshach, entering into a contract for ribbis, even before anyone has paid or collected ribbis, is an isser min ha'Torah. And that's what the Tanakhama is arguing with Rav Nechemya and Rav Elazar ben Yaakov on as to whether ripping up the shtar is an appropriate thing to do, and if it's a necessary thing to do, then that would negate their getting malchus. Now the Gemara says, "Hachi nami mistabra," this idea that simply imposing or entering into a contract for interest is itself an isser. The snan, because we learned the elu over in belosase, the following people are over in belosase: hamalva, the lender; valova, and the borrower; haarev, the guarantor. Rashi spent time talking about why the guarantor, but we're not going to get into it right now. But edim and the edim, all of these people are over on belosase. So now bishlama kulo avid maisa. In the case of the malva and the lova and the arev, it's very clear they did an act. They paid ribbis. They imposed ribbis, they did something. But the Edom, what did they do? They didn't do any maisa. Ela Edom my avod. What did the Edom do? Ela lav, but rather, you should learn from here, Shema Aminah, the Shuma Milsehi. You should learn that imposing of interest, meaning entering into a contract for interest, is itself a lav. And so therefore, Edim, who are part of that entering into a contract, are also doing a lav. So it's a raya that long before anyone pays or collects interest, there's an iser in entering into a contract, shema minah, and therefore, we do in fact learn that, and therefore, there's no raya that there's a machlokas tanoim. So, it seems almost as if it's a, I didn't see that any of the mafarshim say it, but it seems almost like at this point that we're left with a question on Rabbi Yochanan, because we're not able to explain why the gazlanim, who are malvei ribis, need to return the, ribis according to them. And in fact, the halacha, which we're going to see later in the Gemara and is brought la halacha, is that, that you do need to, in the halacha, not like Rabbi Yochanan, halacha like Rabbi Lazar, that you do need to return ribis ketsutza if it's ribis daraisa. Okay. Amar Rav Safra. We're now about, 11 lines up from the bottom. Amar Rav Safra. Kol she'ilu b'dineihem motziyem mi lova l'malva, b'dineinu machzirim mi malva l'lova. He says as follows. That anything that in a secular court, they would enforce the borrower paying money to the lender, right? So, i.e. interest. That in that case, we, Beis Din, would enforce the lender returning it to the borrower. Now, obviously, this is going according to Rabbi Lazar's opinion that you do return ribbis that you take. So, in other words, what we're saying is, it's relevant what secular courts believe, because if you want to know, is something really interest? So if secular courts would enforce it, that makes it interest. They would collect interest, and therefore our courts, which of course don't allow collection of interest, would enforce return of the interest. That's Rav Safra's rule. And conversely, kol she'ilu b'dineihem ein motziyem milova l'malva, that if the secular courts would not enforce and would not make the borrower pay the lender interest, b'dineinu ein machzirim milova l'malva, then us, in our case of a Beis Din, we would not require the lender to return it to the borrower if the borrower in fact paid him. Because if the borrower paid something on his own volition, which the secular courts would not consider interest, then we're not going to consider it interest, and we're not going to require its return. So that's Rav Safra's rule. Amar Leah Bailer of Yosef. The Klalahu, is that really a valid rule that Rav Safra said? V'ha'sa b'sa. We have the case of sa b'sa. Now we've encountered this a few times already in our short journey in Ezer Neshach. We also had it in Azov, which is the idea as follows. If I tell you I want to borrow from you a bushel of wheat, and I'm going to return to you a bushel of wheat in 2 months. So what's wrong with that? Even Stephen trade. The problem is that what happens if I borrow from you the bushel of wheat when it's worth $10? And by the time 2 months from now, when I need to return it for you, the market price is $11, right? So what's going to happen? That I'll have borrowed something worth 10 and I'm paying back something worth 11. That seems like interest. So therefore, midrabanan, we say, sub to sa, you don't enter into that contract. Now that is only ribis derabanan, because ribis deraisa is where you make up. I'm gonna borrow $10 and pay you back 11. In this case, maybe the price is gonna stay the same, maybe it's gonna go down. It's not ribis katsutsa, it's not arranged from the outset, but rather that's ribis derabanan. So now we're saying, we have the case of sub to sa. Because in secular court, if I made that deal with someone, you give me a bushel of wheat now, I'm going to give it to you in 2 months, the secular courts are going to enforce it and say, you have to give it to him. I don't care if it's worth $11 in 2 months, you still need to pay him. So, but we, on the other hand, would not force the lender to give it back to the borrower. Why? Because it's ribis derabanan. And remember, the machlokas between Rabbi Lazar and Rabbi Yochanan was only about ribis deraisa. Everyone agreed that by ribis derabanan you don't enforce the return. Rabbi Yochanan says, even by ribis deraisa you don't enforce it. Rabbi Lazar said, by ribis deraisa you do enforce it. By ribis derabanan, everyone agrees you don't give it. So the question is, Rabbi Safra's rule fails here. Because in the case of sa b'sa, I borrow a bushel, I say I'm going to pay it back in 2 months, the secular courts would enforce it, and yet we do not consider it interest such that we force the lender who got the bushel of wheat when it's worth 11 to give back a dollar to the borrower. So Rav Safra's rule fails. Amar Lei said to him, Inu b'taras pikadon asaliyade. He says, no, that the reason the secular courts would enforce it is not because they consider it interest, but rather because they would look at this transaction as the following. That, let's say I did this deal with Maishi. I said, you give me a bushel of wheat, I'll give you back one in 2 months. The way they look at it is that Maishi gave me a bushel of wheat. I held it for him for 2 months and I gave it back. So when they enforce that collection, they're enforcing that collection on the basis of a deposit. Now we in halacha don't paskin like that, because the way we look at it is, that would be true if Maishi gave me the bushel of wheat and I put it in the corner and I'm not allowed to touch it and it's a pikadon, and then I gave it back, then we would consider it a pikadon. But when I get to use that bushel of wheat and I have to give him a different bushel of wheat in 2 months, that's a loan. So min halacha, we would not look at it as a pikadon, but in a Gaisha court, they would look at it as a pikadon. And therefore, Reb Safra's rule is only, Rashi says, kol shebedineihem motziim betoras ribis, that anything that they would consider interest, bedineinu machzirin, that we would make the lender return to the borrower. So what we're saying is we're qualifying Reb Safra's rule. It's not just anything that a secular court would enforce from a borrower to a lender, but rather it's something that they would enforce from a borrower to a lender by calling it interest. And so in this case, a sabasa, they would consider it a deposit, they wouldn't consider it interest. Amar Ravina lo Ravashi, Ravina said to Ravashi, v'hari meshkanta b'loi nachyasa, the b'dineya motziya milava l'mava, u'b'dineinu ein machzira milava l'lova. He says, I'm going to give you another case that seems to violate Safra's rule. What is this rule? The rule is as follows. Let's say I lend someone $100. He gives me, according to Rashi says, he gives me a vineyard. So, and what happens? During the time that I am I'm taking that as a mashkon. I lent him $100, and as a mashkon, I took possession of this vineyard. And the halacha is that I, as the lender, can eat the grapes of the vineyard. Right? Now, in order to avoid ribbis, what's supposed to happen is that when we enter into the loan, we say that to the extent I eat grapes from this vineyard while I'm holding it as a security, that we're going to deduct it from the loan proceeds. So if I eat $10 of grapes, the deal should be, I lend you $100. You give me the vineyard as security. I'm going to eat $10 worth of grapes, then I'm going to have to give you back, then you're going to have to give me back $90 because you've already paid me $10 worth of grapes. Now, Rashi, the Ritva and the Rashba say that Rashi is very particular when he says vineyard, as we're going to actually see Rashi himself says, the top of Amud Beis, is that it only works for something like a vineyard. Why? Because we don't know for certain that there's going to be a crop. Maybe the crops are going to fail, in which case I'll have gotten nothing from the thing, and he'll still owe me $100. So that's not ribbis katsutsa. That's not the raisa ribbis. But if it would be, let's say, a house, and I say, you're borrowing $100. You're going to, for a month. You're going to give me your house for a month, and I'm going to hold it. So meanwhile, I live in that house. I'm getting a clear set amount of benefit. That would be ribbis katsutsa if he does not deduct. Okay? So what we're talking about in this case is as follows, is that I take his vineyard. I should account for it in the contract by saying, you only have to pay me back $100 minus whatever I eat, but I don't do that. I don't actually put that in the contract. So therefore, every grape I eat, I'm getting ribbis, right? So, but that's only ribbis drabanan. That's because it's not a ribbis katsutsa, because we don't know the exact amount of grapes that are going to be produced. So therefore, in a case like that, where I take possession of the vineyard, right? So I lend you $100, I take possession of the vineyard, and I start eating grapes. And now, what happens? The guy who was the borrower said, I don't like that he's eating my grapes, and he comes and takes grapes from the field when I'm in possession of it. It's his, but I'm in possession of it as security. So the Gemara says, a secular court would enforce this and say, what kind of business is this of the borrower, you coming to your old field and taking grapes? You're not allowed to. When you give something as security, the fruits belong to the person who's holding the security. So therefore, a secular court would enforce that the borrower is not allowed to take the grapes. And yet, in our halachos, because this is only ribbis derabanan and it's not ribbis katsutsa, we would not force the lender to return to the borrower. So therefore, in other words, we would not make him return the grapes because when he took the grapes, it was only ribbis derabanan. So Reb Safra's rule fails, because you have something that the secular courts would collect it, and the Jewish courts would not require its return. So Reb Safra's rule doesn't work. So the Gemara says, Amar Lei, Inu B'Torah Zvini Asali Yadayo. He says, no. He says, that same kind of answer as before. He says, no, the way the Goyisha courts, the way the secular courts would look at this is the following. That if I lend him $100 and he gives me his vineyard to watch as a security, the way we look at that is that I purchased his vineyard for $100. That's why I have the vineyard and he has $100. A month later, when we're supposed to reverse the transaction, I'm going to sell him the field, and he's going to give me back the $100. Therefore, if the borrower, the old borrower, comes and steals grapes from the vineyard during the period that I have it, the reason the secular courts are going to make him pay for that is because I was the owner. I bought it from him. It's true I have to sell it back to him later, but right now I'm the owner. So therefore, it's saying that Reb Safra's rule is only when the secular courts will enforce it as a matter of collecting interest. But in this case, the secular courts would not view this as interest. They would view it as stealing something during a time that I had purchased it. So therefore, Reb Safra's rule is still good. Okay, so now we say, okay, so fine. But you're making Reb Safra's rule very limited. Elakol she'ilu b'dineyam dekam Reb Safra maya salash minan. So what exactly is the case where he's coming to tell us anything that's a chiddush? So we say, hachi asalash minan. This is what he's coming to tell us. When it says kol she'ilu b'dineyam moti milova l'malva b'dineyenu machzira mimava l'lova, that when he said that anything that the secular courts will enforce and require the borrower to pay to the lender, then in our courts we require the lender to return it to the borrower, my nihu, what's the case of that? Beribis Katsutsa. It's talking about Ribis Katsutsa, Uchud Rabbi Elazar, and it's like Rabbi Elazar. So now we don't have to come up with fancy cases. We have a very simple case. I lend the guy $100 and he has to pay me back $110. So if I went to the secular courts, if that was what the contract said, they would make him pay me $110 because that's the contract. They don't care about ribis, right? So therefore, if the secular courts would enforce that the borrower has to pay me the 10 extra dollars, our courts will enforce that you have to return it. Who is that like? That's like Rabbi Elazar, not like Rabbi Yochanan. Okay. And what about the second half of Rabbi Safra's statement? Ain anything that in secular courts they would not enforce and consider it interest, but in our courts bedineinu ain machzirin, that in our courts we would not return it. Umaynihu, what's that case in the sefer? He's saying it's ribis mukdemes, ribis mucheres. So as follows: let's say I have a friend and I want to borrow money from him and I want him to think well of me, so I give him a gift, and the next day I'm going to come and ask him to borrow $100. That's ribis. Because you're giving someone, even though you gave the gift before, you're giving someone something more, because you look at it as you gave him the gift, plus paying him back the $100, because you gave him the gift in order to get the $100. So that's ribis d'rabanan. Or ribis mu'uchar is mu'ucheres, which is the converse. I go to my friend, I borrow $100, and I pay him back the $100. Then the next day, I give him a gift of $10, right? So we say, midrabanan, we look at that as if that's part of ribis, and you would be over on the issur of ribis. So what it's saying is, obviously a secular court would not enforce that, because when I gave the first gift, he wasn't obligated to lend me. And when I gave the second gift, I'd already paid him back. I wasn't obligated to give it. So obviously a secular court's not going to enforce it. So therefore, our courts are not going to require, even though lehalacha, we consider that early gift or the late gift to be ribis, we're not going to make the lender return it to the borrower. Why? Because it's only ribis d'rabanan. Okay. Now, we're going to go back to our Mishnah. You guys thought we got away from that complicated case. We're right back at it. And a little bit of a complicated Gemara here, but we'll work through it. So just let's remember what the Mishnah said. The Mishnah was trying to come up with cases of Neshech and Tarbis, and then we ended up saying Neshech and Tarbis are really the same thing. So the ratio of the Mishnah was telling us a case of, I'm sorry? Oh, I'm sorry. Those are different forms of interest. I'm sorry. So different forms of interest. So therefore, in the beginning of the Mishnah, it was telling us cases that are ribis minatora, ribis katsutsa. So I borrow $100. You have to pay me back $110. That's ribis d'oraisa. And in the Seifa, we were describing a case of ribis d'rabanan. And I'm sorry to do this, but we'll take a minute to review what we said there, because it's important to understand this Gemara, because we're going to get into it in detail. So what happened was, in that case, we said as follows, that someone bought wheat for 25 for a dinar zav, which is 25 for a gold dinar, which is 25 silver dinar for a kor, right? And he said, and you're gonna, and so they said, and you're going to give, and what happened? I paid 25 silver dinrim now for you to deliver to me a kor of wheat in 2 months, right? And so therefore, that is ordinarily a problem. Why? That's a futures contract. Why is it a problem? Because I'm gonna pay $25 now for the wheat. You're gonna deliver it to me in 2 months. What if in 2 months from now, it's worth $30? Now, so that's why, generally speaking, that would be usser midrabanan as a case of ribbis. Now, we discussed then two exceptions to that rule. One exception was, if at the time the guy took my $25 and he's going to deliver me wheat in 2 months, if he has that wheat, right? So then we look at it, even though he's not giving it to me till 2 months from now, we look at it as if I bought that wheat. And he's just not delivering it to me for 2 months. And therefore, when it goes up to $30, it doesn't matter because it was my wheat that increased in price. That's one exception where the seller, the seller of the future contract actually has the item in his possession. That was one exception. And the other exception we said was if it's a commodity price. In other words, if that's the settled price, $25 today, right? So then even if he does not have it in his possession, it's okay, and I could get it in 2 months from now, even if it's worth 30. Why? Because since he could take my $25, right, that I just paid him, and he could go buy it easily in the marketplace, so he could have had it. And since he could have had it, it's as if he had it, and therefore any increase in value over the next 2 months would be similar to the case where he did have it. Yeshlo. So these are two exceptions to the rule, right? And so the case we had in the Mishnah was as follows. The way we understood it, and I'm going to explain it the way eventually tomorrow we're going to learn the Mishnah.
How about if the price went down?
The issue.
25 and it's
now. Oh, that's not a problem, because that's not ribbis.
Not ribbis on the other end.
No, what would be the ribbis? I paid him money.
Right.
He's giving me back less money, so I'm a bad businessman.
It's a loss.
Okay, so now, what happened in the case in the Mishnah? If anyone wants, they could look at the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, "Lakachim en chitin bedinar zav hakor." He bought a kor of chitin of wheat for a dinar zav 25. V'chein hashar, that was the market price. So what did we say? That's one of the exceptions. Therefore, he was allowed to do this. Amdu chitin belamed dinar. 2 months later, wheat was worth 30. Right. So now, theoretically, he could have paid me the 30. It's not a problem, because since when I gave him the 25, that was the market price, commodity price, he was allowed to do it. But what happened? Amar lo, so he said to, I said to him, Ten li chitai, give me my wheat that I was supposed to get 2 months from now. It's now been 2 months. Shani rotza lemochron velikach ben yayin. Why? Because I decided that I played the market on wheat, and now I think the wheat is fully priced. I want to go buy wine with it. So the problem is, he doesn't have the wheat right now. So Amar lo, he says to him, Harechi techa asuyas alai b'shloshim. All right, let's just set the price of the wheat at 30, because now wheat is worth 30. So I now owe you $30. And v'harei lecha etzli b'hen yayin. And you can come over the next year or whatever, when you want your wine, come to me and I'll give you the wine, and I'll give you $30 worth, or 30 dinrin worth of wine over time. So what does he do? He converts the debt, the value of the wheat that had gone up from 25 to 30, he converts that to a debt, and then the guy owes him wine. But the Mishnah says this is a problem of ribbis. Why? Because yayin ain lo. He doesn't have the wine. So if he doesn't have the wine, at the time he converted the $30 of wheat to the $30 of wine, he didn't have the wine. And so what is it? It's a futures contract, because I'm giving him the equivalent of $30 today of wheat. He's giving me wine over a period of time, but he doesn't have the wine. So therefore, it's psika la peres. That's what it's called when you do this futures contract.
You also have to say that there's no commodity price for the wine at the time?
Excellent. So that's what we're going to deal with today. Okay. So now that we understand what the Mishnah said, we're going to talk about Seth's question. Okay. So the Gemara says, V'chi ain lo yayin, my have. Who cares if he doesn't have wine? And essentially, the Gemara is asking Seth's question, which is, Why not just say that since the wine has a commodity price, and the Mepharshim explain why you see from this case that there is a commodity price, so big deal. So he does not have the exception of owning the wine, but he should have the exception of that he could go out and purchase it for this price. B'hatanya, we learned in a Braisa, or some learn in the Mishnah, the Masar Sasha says, B'hatanam, we learned in the Mishnah, ain't poskin ala peros, we don't set a price on peros for the future, ad she yatza hashar, until it's gone out to the gate. Meaning what? That's that set a price. Because how would it work? In other words, what, you know, the Gemara understood supply and demand, right? So the price of wheat or anything is going to depend on supply and demand. But you don't know supply till all the farmers finish their thing. So basically what would happen is you could start buying right away, but the price hasn't been set yet because no one fully knows the supply. Once all the farmers have done their crops and you say, oh, it was a bumper year, therefore price is less, or it was a lean year, price is more. At a certain point, everyone knows how much crops there are, and with supply and demand, they settle out a price, and that becomes the price. That's Yatza Ashar. It goes out to the gate, meaning at that point, everyone knows the price. Yatza Ashar, once there's a commodity price, poskin, FLP, poskin, then you can, in fact, make up to sell to I'll pay $25 today, you give me wheat in 2 months, even if it's 30. Why? This was the reason I said, because even though the guy selling it to me doesn't have wheat at the time he's taking my $25, but someone else does, and he could just as easily go buy it. And since he could go buy it, it's as if he did buy it, it was his when the value went up. So that's the brisa. So basically, the Gemara is asking as follows, is asking Seth's question. Who cares if he doesn't have the wine? Since the wine has an established price, so say, he's converting the $30 of wheat into $30 of wine, and we know it's $30 of wine, and so it's true he doesn't have the wine, but who cares? He has a commodity price. So Amar Rabba says, Masnisen, very interesting distinction, Masnisen beba locho bedmeim askinan. He says, no, the Mishnah is very specific, because ein hachinami. Let's assume, as the way Rashi explains it, is let's assume that I gave him $25 for wheat 2 months from now. 2 months from now, I go to him and say, I want my wheat because I want to go buy wine, right? So therefore, he gives me the wheat. Now that's not our case of our Mishnah. Our case of Mishnah, he converted it. But let's just say, he gives me the wheat, right? Now he's paid me the wheat. Now that's okay that he paid $25 and got $30 worth of wheat because there was a market price at the beginning. So now, I now have $30 worth of wheat. I go to the same guy and say, here, I'll give you this $30 of wheat, which is equivalent to $30. You give me wine, $30 of wine over the next year. Right? So that would be fine, the Gemara is saying. Because there, in both cases, at the beginning, when I gave him $25, that was the price. And when I gave him $30 of wheat for $30 of wine, that was the price. And there was a commodity price. But how is that case different from our Mishnah? Because in our Mishnah, he took the $30 of wheat. He didn't give it to me. Instead, he said, I'm converting my debt to you of $30 into a future contract to buy wine, right? And so therefore, like we learned in a different Braisa, so he says, we're talking about, in our Mishnah, where he came to obligate him in money, meaning he assumed responsibility for a debt. He owed me $30 of wheat, and he said, I'm going to take that debt, and I'm going to do it. Uchidisanya, like we learned, Haresh Hayanosha Bechavero Mana, someone owed his friend a mana, Bahalach Omer Al Garno, and he went and stood over him, and Maishi was a farmer, he owed me $100, and when he was harvesting his crop, he went to the threshing house, I went and stood there, and I said, Omer, Tainli Mosai, give me my $100, now you have $100 because you did your crop. Because I want to buy wheat with it. Now's the time everyone's harvesting their wheat. I want my $100 back so I could go buy wheat. Amar lo, he said to him, Chitim Yeshli Shanosin Loch. He says, so Maishi says, no, don't take $100 from me. I'm standing here at the granary. I have plenty of wheat. Let's just make a deal. You're anyway going to take the $100 and buy wheat. I'll make you a deal today that over the course of the next 12 months, anytime you need wheat, you can come get from me $100 worth. You can get from me that amount of wheat. Save, I say, like, kishar shel achshav. Go out and do it like the price now. V'ani alo echol kol shnei masar chodesh. I'm going to give it to you all 12 months. Why? Usser. That's, So what's the halacha? The halacha is usser. He's not allowed to do that. Maishi cannot say, I'm converting the debt that you owed me, that I owed you $100 into an obligation on my part to give you that much wheat over the course of the next year. Now, why is that a problem? We just finished saying that there is a price, there's yatzar shar, there's a commodity price, so I should be able to do that transaction. So we say, why? Delav ke'isaro habali yadadami. Because it's not like the case where he gave me money. Had Maishi given me the $100, said, here's the $100 you owe me, but do me a favor, buy your wheat from me, and then I took the $100 and bought it from Maishi, that would be fine. Because what was the reason that if, and this is very good, what was the reason that if there's a commodity price, I'm allowed to do a futures contract, right? It's because since I can take that $25, I'm sorry, since I've given the $25, he doesn't have it, but he can go buy it, and then I'll have it, right? And so therefore, it says if he had it. It says if he had it, so then when it increases in value, it was deemed as if it was mine. But if I don't give him cash, right? So even though there's a commodity price, he doesn't have cash to go buy it. So therefore, the rationale falls off. The rationale was, I could have gone and bought it right then. The fact that I didn't doesn't preclude me. But if I'm not giving him cash, and I'm just converting a loan, I'm rolling a loan, so he doesn't have cash to buy it. And if he doesn't have cash to buy it, that rationale doesn't apply anymore. So that's Rabba's Teretz. Rabba's Teretz is exactly that, that the problem when he doesn't have wine is because even though there's a commodity price only helps when I'm starting with a value. But if I'm not starting with a value, meaning if I'm only converting a loan, I don't necessarily have the money to go buy it now. And that's Rabba's Teretz. And by the way, this is going to be the final Teretz of the Gemara tomorrow, Amen Hashem. But the
stuff, what he's got to do is a kinyan.
What is that?
He's holding the stuff.
What do you mean?
I'm going to give you $100 worth of wheat over the next year. Here, kinyan, pick the thing up.
All right, so we're gonna see that. So what you're saying is it's yeshlo, that he has it.
You're looking at it. Everybody's standing here.
Okay, we're gonna get there. Okay, but just to, in the case of our Mishnah, there was nothing standing there. So in the case of our Mishnah, what happened was, I gave him $25 today for a core of wheat in 2 months. 2 months from now, I come to him and say, give me my wheat because I want to buy wine. He says, I don't have your wheat, so I'm going to convert the debt, not at $25, but at $30, and I'm going to give you $30 of wine over the next year. So he did not have it in that case, right? Now in the Bryce's case, he does have it. That's going to be what we're going to address right now. So therefore, Amar Lei Abaya, Abaya said, "Idlo ki isaro habali yado." If you're telling me that that's what was going on in our Mishnah, my iri ainlo, afilu yeshlo nami. So he has essentially. It's an interesting thing that Gemara does. The Gemara says, if you're telling me that our Mishnah is like the Braisa, and what was the case of the Braisa? The Braisa was a case of yeshlo, right? So therefore, the Braisa we're bringing requires that it has to be Yeshlo and it has to be Yatzah Shar. It has to be the two together. So what we're saying is that's what you see from the Braisa, because it says that it's still Usser, right? So therefore, I'm sorry, it says even if you have both, it's still Usser. That's that Braisa. So now what the Gemara is saying is as follows, that from the fact that Braisa is what we're using to say our Mishnah. So if we're going to match the Braisa to our Mishnah, then our Mishnah would be dealing with a case even where the Yayin is not there. I'm sorry, even if the Yayin is there, it's still Usser, right? So therefore, how could you say that our Mishnah matches the Braisa, right? If our Mishnah makes a point of saying that the wine isn't there. According to this Braisa, even if the wine is there, it doesn't matter, right? So now, So therefore, Abaya says, I don't like this explanation, and I'm going to explain the Mishnah entirely differently. Now, just to spoil it for tomorrow, just pay attention to what happened here, is the Mishnah actually makes perfect sense to us. It's only if you assume that the Mishnah matches the case of the Braisa, and therefore there is Yeshlo going on, and then the question is, well, why does our Mishnah say Einlo? So it's a problem in matching the Braisa to the Mishnah. But the logic is fine. The logic of you can't convert a debt in order to enter into a futures contract because the rationale of a market price doesn't apply if he doesn't have the cash. And that's in fact going to be our answer of Rava tomorrow, but Abaye doesn't like it because he's being very literal, saying if the Braisa has to match the Mishnah. Okay, so therefore, Ella Amar Abaye says as follows, Masnisin, our Mishnah is something, talking about something else. Kidatani Rab Safra Beribis de Bei Rabbi Chiya. Like Rab Safra taught about the Braises of Ribis from Rab Chiya, the son of Rab Safra Beribis de Bei Rabbi Chiya, because he learned as follows, Yesh Tvarim Shemu Tarim Vasurim Ipnei HaRamas Ribis. There are things that technically speaking, everything you're doing is mutter, and it is not Ribis, but it's Asur, because it stinks like you're playing games with Ribis. That's what they're basically saying. Ketzav, what would be a case of this? Amar lo, he said to him, Haveni mana. Someone said to someone, lend me 100. Amar le, mana ainli, I'm sorry, mana is 25. He said, Amar le, mana ainli, I don't have 25. Chitin b'mana yeshli, but I do have, wheat that's worth 25. Shani nosin lecha, and I'll give it to you. Okay. So then, what happened? So what was the transaction here? He was saying as follows. I wanted to borrow $25. He says, I don't have $25, but I'll give you wheat worth $25, and I need to pay him 3 months from now $25 cash. That's not a problem, because he gave me something worth $25, and I'm gonna pay him $25. But what happened? Nosin lo chitim b'mana. So he gave it to him for $25. Now, he owes him $25 back. But what happened? The guy who just gave him the wheat, all of a sudden he found money. He didn't have a money before, but v'chazer v'lochon hen menu be'esr v'arba sela. So he goes, and what happened? So I wanted to borrow $25. I went to him, he said, I don't have $25, I'll give you $25 worth of wheat. So now I have $25 worth of wheat, and I owe him $25 in 3 months. But I really need the cash right now, and I can't wait for the market. So I go back to the same guy, and I say, do you have $24? He says, yeah, $24 I have. So he said, okay, fine, I'll buy that wheat for $24. So he bought back the wheat he just gave me for $25. He bought it back for $24, right? So now, technically speaking, that's mutter, v'asr lasas kain. You can't do it, v'nei haramas ribis. Because at the end of the day, what does it look like? It's true, everything that happened. Let's assume I did the same transaction. I went to him, I said, give me $25. He said, I don't have $25, I have $25 worth of wheat. I took the wheat. Now I'm desperate for money, so I go to my next door neighbor and I say, will you buy this $25 worth of wheat for $24? And he does, he gives it to me. That's no problem. So the fact that I chose to take a discount on my wheat with my next door neighbor doesn't affect the lender. I took $25 from him, I owe $25 from him. But what happened was, in this case, I sold him back the stuff for $24. So when all is said and done, I asked him for $25, he gave me wheat, I gave him back the wheat, he gave me $24. So now I got $24 out of the deal, and 3 months from now I owe him $25. Right? So even though everything he did was mutter, it stinks. So therefore, you're not allowed to do that. That's a case of Aramas Ribis. So therefore, Abaye is going to explain, or try to explain, it's not going to work very well, try to explain our Mishnah as being a case of Aramas Ribis, not a case of a futures contract. So we say, Hachinami kigon da'amar halveni shloshim dinrim. So we're giving a pretext to the Mishnah. I'm sorry, we're running over. We'll try and wrap up quickly. That we're giving a pretext to the Mishnah. That I went to the guy in the Mishnah and I said, give me 30 dinar. I wanted 30 dinar of money. Amarle, he said to me, shloshim dinrim ainli. I don't have 30 dinrim. Chitin b'shlosha dinrin yeshli, but I do have $30 worth of chitin. Shani nosin l'chada, I'll give to you. Now is where the Mishnah picks up the stories, and we've now kind of set a stage for the Mishnah. Now the Mishnah, the way Abaye understands it, says as follows. Nosin l'chitin b'shloshin dinrin. I gave him $30 worth of wheat. V'chazar v'lachom hey menu b'dinar zahav. He bought it from me for $25. So then we say as follows. E is l'chamr l'lova, the yoyev le b'shloshim dinar, that if the guy who paid me the $25 has wine that he's going to give me 30 dinar worth of wine, perahu de kashaku minei v'leslan ba. He says that if I'm taking from him fruits, because he has the wine, so therefore what happened? I asked him for $30. He said, I don't have $30, I'll give you wheat for $30. He gives me wheat for $30. I sell the wheat back to him for $25. And now, he comes and says, pay me back. And what do I owe him? I owe him 30. So the Gemara is saying as follows. If he has wine, and I'm going to give him back peros, that's $30 worth of peros, that's okay. But if he, I'll explain why that's okay in a second. And if he doesn't have wine, kivan de les lechamra, since he doesn't have wine, vadai mishkal zuzi minei, I'm going to tell him, look, you don't have wine, I need my money, give me the $30 you owe me, I'm going to end up giving him $30, and then it's going to end up mechzi karibis. So if he has wine, if I have wine and I can give him $30 worth of wine, we're all good. We'll explain why in a minute. But if I don't have wine and I'm going to end up giving him $30 cash, that's a problem, because at the end of the day, he bought his own $30 worth of wheat for $25, and now I'm giving him back $30, that's mechzi karibis and his usher. Now, why is it okay if you give the fruits? It's different things in the Rishonim, but basically the idea is it doesn't look like ribis. Because in other words, what happened? At the end of the day, he gave me wheat at the beginning, and I'm giving him back fruits at the, I'm giving him back wine at the end. So the fact that, and the if you remember, the wheat at the beginning was worth 30. And now I'm giving him back wine that's worth 30. That's not ribis. But if you look at the monetary side of the transaction, he gave me $25 when he bought the wheat. Once we're converting to dollars, we look at it and say, wait, $25 came in, $30 went out, that's mechzi karibis and it's usher. So that's how a buyer wants to learn the Mishnah. Amar Rava, Rava said to him, Ihachi, it's a very nice theory that that's what's going on in the Mishnah, but none of the words in the Mishnah make sense. Why is it tain li chiti? He says, so in other words, when the guy comes to collect from me, the Mishnah said, give me my wheat. He doesn't want his wheat. He wants his money. So he says, okay, he wants the money of the wheat, meaning he wants his 25, he wants his money back. So we say, okay, tenei, so learn the Mishnah, learn as if it says, so the Gemara says, okay, so you change the Mishnah. What about the fact that it says, Shani wrote to Lamochron, because I want to sell them. In other words, I'm not selling anything. The guy who wants his money back wants his money back. He's not trying to sell money. He wants his money. So Shemachartim Lachomid Boile, if it was him speaking, he would say, give me back the money for the wheat that I sold you. So the Gemara says, Tani Shemachartim Lacha. So he says, okay, so learn the Mishnah that he said, give me back the wheat for the money that I sold you. Okay, so now the question is as follows. The Gemara, the Mishnah, had established it as saying that meanwhile the price went up to 30, and he said, let my obligation to pay you 30 worth of wheat transfer to an obligation of 30 worth of wine. So we took it from 25 to 30, and we reset the loan, right? So that's what the Mishnah was telling us. But now we're saying, the Mishnah said, I'm going to set your wheat as having been worth 30. But the Gemara says, according to the scenario you're describing, where he gave me 30 of wheat and I gave him back 20, and then he bought it back from me for 25. But what do you mean? We're not switching anything from 25 to 30. In this case, he gave me 30 worth of wheat. I sold it to him for 25, but now I'm giving him back 30 worth of wheat. There was always 30 of produce. So it doesn't make sense. So we say, Hachi Karmelei, this is what he means. B'demei chitecha she'asisa alai b'shloisha dinar harei lecha etzli b'hen yayin. He's saying, with the value of the money that you did in return for 30 dinar worth of wheat, it should be to you for wine. So he's just trying to fit the words of the Mishnah to it. So the Gemara says, and he has no wine. So the Gemara says, at some point this is getting ridiculous. You're changing the words to try and fix the Mishnah. He says, v'habra dinar zahav akur. The Mishnah said it was a dinar zahav for a kur v'chein hashar. That was the commodity price, right? Now remember what we're talking about here. He had something worth 30. He gave it to me for 30. I just sold it to him for 25, but then I owe him 30. So in other words, if it says v'chein hashar, that was the price, that tells you the price was 25. But in everything we're talking about, all the transfers were 30. The only thing that was 25 was the discounted purchase. So how could it say that was the price? The price was not 25. The price was 30. So Rava is going to give a different answer. We're going to get back to that in Mirtz Hashem tomorrow. But basically, what we had was Rava gave us a good answer. We're going to see it's a good answer, where he basically said the reason you couldn't just rely on the fact that the wine had a commodity price, you would be able to rely on that if he had paid me back chitin and I used that to buy it, because then he could take that chitin and buy the wine, and it would be the shar translates to yeshlo. But if all I did was convert it to debt, he doesn't necessarily have the money to go out and buy it, and therefore it makes a difference, and that's why the Mishnah says yes or no, he doesn't have it. Abaye asked the question and said, I have to match the Mishnah to the price exactly, and it doesn't match, therefore I'm going to give you a different answer. And Abaye attempted to say that our Mishnah was not talking about a futures contract at all. Our Mishnah was talking about this case of Ahramas Ribis, where he gave it, and then he bought it back at a discount, and then he owes it back, and we've demonstrated that that does not work with the language of our Mishnah whatsoever, and therefore Rava is going to give a different answer. We'll see that in Mir Tishem tomorrow, and the Rav should be back then.